The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
A lot of people have been talking about what President Trump did a little bit earlier on. It's fair to say he was annoyed.
I'm not happy that Israel's going out now. There was one rocket that I guess was fired overboard. It was after the time limit and it missed its target. And now Israel's going out. These guys got to calm down. Ridiculous. I didn't like plenty of things I saw yesterday. I didn't like the fact that Israel unloaded right after we made the deal. They didn't have to unload. And I didn't like the fact that the retaliation was very strong. But in all fairness, Israel unloaded a lot. And now I hear Israel just went out because they felt it was violated by one rocket that didn't land anywhere. That's not what we want, I'll tell you. And I'm telling you, I'm not happy about that, Israel, either. All I do is play both sides. I'm going now, as you know, to NATO. Some of you are going with me, and I think it's going to be successful. We'll see. I'll let you know. But we have to have Israel calm down because they went on a mission this morning. I got to get Israel to calm down now. You know what? We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the f*** they're doing. Do you understand that?
That went out on live TV, as you might imagine. It's fair to say Donald Trump is quite annoyed at what transpired after the ceasefire was supposed to have come into effect. And what appears to have happened was little bit of afters happened. And as you heard President Trump describe it there, someone sent something, then there was an over-retaliation on it. What has happened now is both sides seem to have towed the line and the ceasefire is in place. But the big question is what happens next? What might Iran do? Will they do any more? Ali Ansari is the founding director of the Institute of Iranian Studies at St. Andrews University in Edinburgh and joins me now. Good afternoon, Ali.
It's often difficult to keep up, I have to say, with events. I mean, 1 minute you think, it's going in one direction, the next minute it takes a radical 180-degree turn. So, I mean, first of all, we have the concern about the assault on Ghatab, but that obviously has been very, choreographed and I think was done as a performative exercise by the Iranians. Trump then announces a ceasefire, which is then, it seems to be, broken by the Iranians for one reason or another. But then Trump is quite adamant and actually quite extraordinarily angry at both sides, I have to say, including the Israelis, about sort of sticking to his ceasefire. So at the moment we have the ceasefire and I don't see that necessarily the ceasefire will be broken unless there's another sort of reckless missile launch from the Iranians. I mean, it seems to be that the earlier launch was either done by mistake or by rogue elements or by people who are beyond the command and control of the central authority or whatever. I mean, it's very, very unclear what on earth is going on. So at the moment, it seems to be holding.
The real challenge here is to remove the heat from the pot. And to do that, we need level heads and we need people to clearly exert control both in Tehran and in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the problem is that probably the situation in Iran is less clear and less in control than the situation in Israel. There are hotheads on both sides, but the difference is that I think in Iran, the sort of command and control that you might expect is not really there. So there is a little bit of anxiety about what that means.
And let's face it, that is down mostly to the initial Israeli action, because they were the ones who took pretty much the senior
entire leadership
of the military.
I mean, I think yes and no. I mean, I think certainly there's an element to that, but I think also it's partly to do with the way in which the Revolutionary Guard and the Missile Command works. And when we had a situation a few years ago when that airliner was shot, accidentally, and that was also the result of an error made by a technician on the ground, and that should have been, much more firmly under control. But clearly, he panicked and fired two missiles at a civilian airliner.
What is going through the minds of the Iranian leadership at the moment? Are they confident that they can control the situation?
Are they coming under pressure from within, perhaps to do more?
I think they're quite bewildered. I think they're quite rattled. The bluster is pretty extensive, which often is quite a useful guide to the sort of the way in which they're disguising some of that that concern, that anxiety that they really have. I mean, they're sort of basically declaring a decisive victory over Israel, even though their airspace is still under Israeli control. They're also claiming that Trump begged them for a ceasefire. So this sort of thing sort of suggests to me that they're sort of compensating with a bit of bluster. And, you know, there are indications within that there's a lot of division and disagreement, not least caused by the fact that a lot of these early Israeli attacks were the result of deep penetration of Iranian leadership and security establishment by Mossad. So there'll be this sort of worry about who else is basically a Mossad mole in the system. I mean, this is it's a highly paranoid system, and it's now going to be even worse.
Where do the Iranian people sit in all of this? Because it's fair to say the Iranian government does not necessarily represent the views of everyone.
Yeah,
I mean, where are they in all of this?
They'll have their loyalists, but I mean, it's interesting how few these are really. I mean, even the demonstrations that we've been allowed to see now, bear in mind there are no journalists there, so we can't really assess this. So what we get is basically stuff that's mediated through state sanctions, sort of media and whatever. It's even that's fairly limited. I mean, the crowds aren't big. The overwhelming sort of sense I get from Iranians is that an air of detachment, actually. They don't seem connected to this at all. Their view of, you know, there's obviously fear, there's anxiety, there's a whole range of different emotions, as you might expect in a war situation. But they don't see themselves really as part of this sort of issue. They're not like united in solidarity with their government, because partly, you know, they see this war as something that's been forced upon them, not necessarily by the Israelis, but, you know, also by their own government. And so while they're obviously, you know, many people will not be great fans of Netanyahu at the moment, that doesn't necessarily translate into a deep affection for their own government, who they, you know, they will notice has provided no civil defence for them at all. I mean, where is the civil defence? Where is the bunkers and the others for ordinary people? There's nothing. I mean, there's nothing.
The other side of all of this was the search for nuclear weapons, or at least the attempt to destroy potential nuclear weapons, of which we've actually found no evidence whatsoever. But the potential long-term risk has been made a little riskier, if I could put it that way, by the withdrawal, or at least the threatened withdrawal, from the International Atomic Energy Agency, which had at least been
I don't think they will. I mean, I think the issue about the nuclear weapons, by the way, just to clarify, I mean, it's not a question of really whether, I don't think they'd actually decided to go ahead and make the weapons. It was a question of whether they, the lead in time to do this, and why they had so much enriched uranium. I mean, the fact is they you know, the Iranians don't like to make life easy for themselves. So that what they did was they sort of ramped up enrichment to scales and quantities which are completely unnecessary for the purposes they said they were for. So that raised a lot of suspicions. They also then said that they had another secret enrichment facility that they'd never declared. I mean, this sort of thing, again, doesn't really help. So I think that's where the issue is. I don't think anyone was going to be finding any bombs, per se. It was more a question of the fact that, here was a problem that the Iranians consistently, whenever they wanted to sort of put pressure on the West, would, ratchet up the enrichment in order to exact leverage of one sort or another. But of course, you know, this is a very dangerous game of poker to play. And in this case, you know, there was a case where the Israelis had decided for one reason or another this was the time they were going to go. But I think we've got to be quite careful in sort of drawing particularly analogies with what happened in Iraq in 2003, for instance. It's not the same.
Finally, Ali, we've had quite an interesting 72 hours. Lots of people have been worried about where this would go next. Are you going to sleep a little easier tonight?
I would hope so. I would like to have a bit of a break, to be honest, and sort of like keep away from anything to do with confrontation, conflict. You know, God help us, I have a lot of sympathy for those on either side of the conflict that are living under this sort of barrage. I'm very glad I'm not there.
Ali Ansari, Founding Director of the Institute of Iranian Studies at St. Andrews University. Thanks so much for joining us, Ali.
Thank you.
John in Limerick says, Jonathan, it's refreshing in a way to hear a politician, this is Donald Trump, throw a few F-bombs around here and there. It'd be no harm if some of our politicians threw a few around at some of those well-paid mandarins here who oversee the sclerotic. I'm going to have to come back to that. Bad delivery of everything. I'm going to have to practice that word because it's quite a complicated one. John, thank you for throwing me and in something that normally doesn't happen when I'm reading a text message. Look, lots of people wondering. I think it's the first time ever that a president of the United States has sworn on the record. It's just not done. We've had incidents of swearing in Leinster House. We know we have. Has the Taoiseach ever sworn? Last time I can think of was John Bruton when he swore about the F&P's process back in the 90s. It can happen. It is somewhat refreshing. I agree with you, John.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.